Omaha Public Radio presents another luncheon broadcast from the Omaha Press Club on Noon Forum. On today's program, we'll hear from newly appointed superintendent of the Omaha Public Schools, Mark Evans. Mr. Evans assumed the post of superintendent in July after a nearly two-year search for a successor to John McKeel. He'll outline his goals for the Omaha Public School District, including a new strategic plan. This program was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Thursday afternoon, October 17, 2013, for broadcast at this time. The opinions expressed are those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of the Omaha Press Club or KIOS-FM. Following Mr. Evans' remarks, the question and answer period will be moderated by Joni Ballion. Here now to introduce the program is Vern Wood, both members of the Omaha Press Club's Education Committee.
Today we'll meet Mark Evans, the new superintendent of the Omaha Public Schools. Mark comes to us from the Andover Public Schools, Andover, Kansas, where he was the superintendent from 2005 until June of this year when he accepted the position of the superintendent of the Omaha Public Schools. During Mark's tenure with the Andover Public School System, the district was recognized nationally as a technology leader and also demonstrated growth in all achievement areas. Mark has over three decades of education experience, including 25 years in leadership roles. Following his presentation, Mark will take your questions. You'll find paper and pencil on your table. Please write down your questions, which will be brought to the podium after his speech. And now, let's welcome Mark Evans.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that, and I certainly appreciate the invitation to be here today. I really appreciate the opportunity to be here. What a beautiful setting, gorgeous views. I've never been up here before, so I'm really enjoying that. I would tell you that I have to be very careful today, very cautious on what I say to you today. My wife's in the audience. Oh, my. Stacy, you might put your hand up there, let him know. It's really going to impact what I'm saying to you because it's going to impact a lot of my material, but I'll try to make sure I don't get myself in trouble. I want to give you a little bit of background about who I am and about where I've been. I know you've heard a little bit of an introduction. I would share with you that the 20 years of my over three decades of experience were in Wichita Public Schools, which is a mirror district to OPS. It's 50,000 young people, approximately 8,000 employees, approximately 100 schools. And so I've worked in a setting most of my career that looks just like OPS, which has really been helpful as I transitioned to this work here. But before I transitioned here, I have to tell you this, too. They called me, the search group did, and they said, we'd like for you to consider looking at OPS. And so I mentioned something to my wife, and be honest, we were pretty happy. We were making a difference in the community we were in, and we were making a difference with the young people there, and I said, gosh, I don't know. And she said, yeah, I don't know. And it obviously is a great city, and we knew enough about it to be somewhat knowledgeable. My wife was born in Lincoln and didn't move to Wichita until high school. And so actually, she is a native Cornhusker, and she just made that one bad mistake when she moved to Kansas and met me in high school. Other than that, she's made good decisions her whole life. We knew enough about it to know it was a good city, but we thought, gosh, I just don't know. So I called the guy back and said, no, I appreciate your interest in me and all of that, but I don't know that it's the right time. He said, well, would you at least look at it? Study it a little bit. I said, oh, okay. So I got online, and I checked the last 2 years of every story written about OPS in the Omaha World Herald. And then I called him back and said, not only am I not interested, I'm not interested. Because I read those stories, and I thought, oh, my goodness, there's some distractions up there. And I thought, I'm not interested. And he said, you're not looking at the right thing. Mark, I want you to dive deeper. I want you to call people that work in that district. I want you to meet some people. I want you to take a little time. He said, you're not looking at the right. You're looking at the 10,000-foot level. You're not looking at 50,000 great young people. I said, well, golly, okay, I'll check into that. So I started asking people, I started calling people, I started looking into student data, I started looking at employee information, and I'll tell you what I found. I found that this is a jewel of a city and a jewel of a district that really the distractions were way above the 86 different schools and programs, way above the 51,000 wonderful young people that make up OPS. And I called him back and said, you know what, I think I would be interested in talking to you. I would be interested in learning more about OPS. I would be interested in learning more about what Omaha has to offer. So with that said, that's what brought my wife and I down here. By the way, we bought a house in the last 6 months over off of Izzard and 52nd Street. We sure love that neighborhood. It's real close to my office down the street here. Great place to live. Wonderful neighbors. In fact, we've got some neighbors that are sitting by her there. So they even come to hear me speak. So they're really nice neighbors if they're willing to do that. But that's just pretty typical of our neighborhood. But I actually think it's pretty typical of most of Omaha. I think it's a great place to be, and my wife and I are privileged to be here today with you, and we're privileged to be in Omaha. And by the way, thank you to all the retired teachers that are here today. Could you raise your hand if you're a retired teacher or educator from any place? Let's give these folks a round of applause. I'll tell you, folks, that willingness to make a difference is what it's all about. That willingness to step up to the plate and make a difference in the lives of these type of young people right behind me. Great kids. Just gives you a little glimpse of why we do what we do. Just gives you a little glimpse of the importance of the work that the retired folks in our room did and the importance of what we're doing today. So I'm going to share a little bit about what I've learned about Omaha. Here's what I've been doing the last 100 days. And really, I was hired in January. Didn't officially start until July. I was a very concerned citizen for about 6 months. But now I'm an employee, actual employee, as of July 1. But here are things that I've been doing since I was offered the position. And since I decided to come to Omaha, I've been analyzing, I've been listening, and now we're to the planning stage, and we're going to talk more about that in just a minute on a strategic plan process that I think is going to be really critical to the long-term success of OPS. And in fact, we're going to need your input on that. But I wanted you to know that I've been doing a lot of study, and I've learned a whole lot about this community, and I found out some surprises that I'm going to talk about later on in this piece. But I also know that we've got some challenges, too, and I'm willing to talk about those as well. Let's go ahead and move on through this. Part of what I shared with the board, these are some things that I said we needed to put in place in this district. This is kind of part of my big picture of what are the strategies that you're going to focus on to help OPS move from where it is today to where we want it to be tomorrow. What are the strategies? And many of these things I hope you're already seeing. One of the things I talked about was clear goals and high expectations, and that's part of what we're going to talk about with the strategic plan, identifying what is it specifically we're going to do to impact student achievement, graduation rates, attendance rates, clear goals in our facilities and the expectations for our facilities. High expectations for all of us, including me. And in fact, if you look up here, you'll even see system-wide accountability, and that includes me. And that includes the whole system. And I think we've got work to do here. And I'm going to mention some of that work in just a minute. You'll also see some of the things that I think help get us there, how we provide training and support, how we create a system that's totally aligned from the board level all the way down to the classroom level, which is a tough job in a large district, creating systems that support that alignment. And I think that's a tough job in any large system. I think it's tough for UP. I think it's tough for ConAgra. That's inherent. It's just absolutely inherent. So big challenges, but I think we're going to get there. So those are some of the things that I talked to the board about and some of the things that I said I'd be doing. As I said, the first thing I said was I was going to listen and I was going to analyze. Look at data. And one of the things that I did when I looked at data was start to find out some things specific that I want to share with you today. So we're going to quickly go through some of those things that we know today that you may not know. Some of the data that I discovered over the last 6 months that I think provides a little glimpse of the opportunity and the challenge for OPS. And I think it's both. I absolutely think it's both. This chart shows the shifting demographic of our school district. Today, in just over a decade, we've gone from 3,425 to 14,644 English language learners. Those are young people that come to our school district with language deficiencies. 5 times increase in 10 years. Now, the good news is we've got great people who understand how to help develop the skills in our English language learners. Quality people. I've been in their classrooms. I've seen them working with our young people. The challenge of it is we do have to provide more because we're trying to catch them up. We're trying to catch them up. You can imagine. Difficult. You're taking a NESA, Nebraska test, and you can't read it very well because you've only been in our country for 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, whatever the case might be. So it's an opportunity. It's a challenge. But it's something I wanted you to know that I don't think everyone recognizes. We have had some shifting demographics. Not only do we have an increased number of ELL students, we have an increased number of refugee students. These are young people and families from Somalia, Nepal, Burma, or Myanmar. Look at that increase in 4 years, and I will tell you it's going to be higher next year. Can you imagine what that'd be like? Not only do you not know the language, it's a whole different culture. Omaha is different than Somalia. I bet everybody knew that one. Everybody knew that. I got to tell you, it's probably less of a transition for my wife and I to go from Wichita to Omaha than Somalia to Omaha. That's just me thinking out loud. These young people have huge challenges. My wife and I don't have much in the transitional challenge because we're Midwesterners. So we get that. She's a Cornhusker, so she really didn't have any transition. She's been trying to teach me the way, but I'm a slow learner. You know, she has to keep kind of beating it into me a little bit. But that's okay. I need that. We have more students across Nebraska and across Omaha that qualify for free and reduced lunch today than ever before. And I think you'll be surprised by the percentage of growth across the state as well as in OPS. We've gone from 50,000 or 50% to 73% in just over a decade. So a pretty significant growth. That's a 50% growth rate in free and reduced. So even though we're in one of our most prosperous times, and there's evidence of that, and you can see it all over downtown, my goodness, there's more construction, more activity going on down here. I mean, and beautiful work, too, by the way. Very impressive work. But even with that, not everybody's a part of that growth. Not everybody's a part of that opportunity. And you can see that by the chart behind us. So again, it's part of our challenge that we're working within. Even with these challenges, and I think this is what really impressed me when I finally said, yes, I will leave and will talk to you about this job, even though, to be quite honest, where I was at, and this may surprise Todd, who works with me in the district office, they really liked me where I was and were trying to convince me to stay. That might surprise you, Todd, but they actually did like me there. But this is what convinced me that this was an opportunity here, an opportunity to tell a story that not everybody's heard, an opportunity to recognize and accelerate growth that needs to happen in OPS for 51,000 great kids, which, by the way, is 18% of the entire K-12 population in Nebraska. We have to be successful. Almost 2 out of every 10 kids, we have to get it right. Well, here's evidence that says we were already beginning to put some of these pieces together. And it made me think this is not a broken system. This is not a dysfunctional setting. We've had some challenges over the last 2 years. I've read about all those challenges, but look at this. If you look deeper, this is striking. And it doesn't happen in hardly any other urban district in the United States. And I'm not just making that up. I can show you evidence of what's happening in Cleveland, Detroit, East St. Louis, and it won't look anything like this graph behind me. In this district, because of high-quality teachers like many of the ones that are retired right here in this room, we have closed the gap and we have increased graduation rates. And look at the number. I think the one that shocks me the most. In 2002-03, that's our Hispanic student population, it was 44.8. Under 50% were graduating. Today, and it has nothing to do with me because I'm new here, but today, because of people in this room and people in this district serving these young people, today that number is 70.3. Folks, that's powerful. That really is powerful. And not only did that number go up, all the numbers were increasing and the gap was closing between all of our ethnic populations. And I think that's a statement for this community. I think it's a statement for this district. And it's one of those pieces, again, you had to dive a little deeper. You had to dig a little deeper into the data and you said, gosh, this district has some wonderful people in it who are serving young people in a wonderful way. There's other evidence. We can look at NESA results. Now, it may not be where we want. We may say, well, it's still not as high as we like, and I agree with that. But are we trending the right way? Are we showing growth, or is it getting worse? Because we've got more challenges. Remember I showed you there's more challenges. You've got more free and reduced. You've got more refugees, more ELLs. Look at this, ladies and gentlemen. Grades 3 through 6, mathematics, up 6% over the last 3 years, 7-8, up 8% over the last 3 years, high school students up 7. And again, I know we're not where, because some might say, well, it's still not high enough. I agree. Has to get better, but we have to trend. You have to trend up. And these folks are making those differences. And that being the staff that's in our buildings today and the folks that are retired here today are helping us make this difference. Same thing, reading. Look at the results. This is your state assessment results, including our most recent ones. And we've just posted those. Actually, these just came out. These are kind of fresh off the press. So that's pretty fresh information, and it sure was encouraging for me, although it also put a little pressure on me too, because then I thought, golly, what if I come in there and that trend goes the other way? They'll say, darn, we were doing well till we brought that Kansan in. Holy cow, now we got problems. But that's good pressure, isn't it? That's good pressure. So I'm excited about that type of pressure. Let's look at another piece of data here. Here's science. Not everything's exactly where we want. When you look at that chart, you'll see we're making some growth and gains at the high school level, but not as much as we'd like to see elementary and middle school. So we got a little work to do there. But, you know, you got to look at the data to know where you need to focus your energy, your strategies, your priorities. That tells us something. Next piece of data on writing. Same thing. We've got some growth evidence there at the high school level, but not what we want to see at the middle level. It's pretty flat. I can tell you we're already planning programs. We're already planning training. We're already working actively because of this piece of data. I've met with staff, and there are activities going on with our teachers, our principals, to help them develop whatever strategy is out there as a top research-based strategy to impact those scores. So that's some of the data that I've seen as I've been analyzing. And I could go a lot deeper into that. I'm trying just to give you a summary. But I also wanted to tell you what I heard, because the other thing I said I was going to do was listen these last 6 months. And so I've gone to multiple groups, community groups, parent groups, administrator groups, teacher groups. And I asked each one of those groups, and I had little documents. I had little feedback forms, and I'd ask them, tell me what we're doing well. Tell me what you think is good about OPS. Tell me what you think we could improve on. And tell me what you think I should be aware of and what you expect from me. And so now I'm going to show you kind of what I heard from people, because it helped give me my marching orders. You gave me some charges. You being this community, you being the internal staff, and everyone else that has a stake in the OPS system, which, by the way, to me, it's the whole state of Nebraska. Here's what you said. Parents and community, I met with multiple groups there. I asked them to give me feedback. I took the top themes that came from those feedback forms. I read every single one of them, 375 forms, and took those top themes. You said, parents and community in Omaha said, staff is a strength, community support is a strength, diverse students and programs, a strength. I agree with each one of those. I know enough now about the district. I've visited 70 of the 86 schools and programs we have in OPS, and I see that and agree with that. I will also say that community support piece, I'm going to stop there for a second, because I think this is a unique thing that you don't even understand. I don't think you recognize how unique this community is. I have never read about, I've never lived in, I've never seen a community that supports public ed and young people like you do. Last year alone, philanthropic support of $30 million was provided to OPS. Philanthropic support that put in early childhood programs, supported professional development activities, did facility enhancements and improvements, put playgrounds, state-of-the-art playground equipment in buildings throughout this district for our young people. I will tell you, ladies and gentlemen, and I say this to every group I speak to, that's been the biggest surprise for me. I just didn't realize it. Sure, I knew it was a great community, but I didn't recognize that it's not just a community that cares. I mean, they care deeply. When someone pulls their wallet out to help support young people, to put a new playground in for elementary children, to build a preschool center, and there's multiple, the list is long, and there's lots of little things and big things. Some of it's technology in classrooms. The litany of grants that philanthropic groups in this community have provided is beyond compare. It's not happening in KCMO. It's not happening in St. Louis, Cleveland, Detroit, San Diego, Florida. It doesn't matter. And I just think you need to be aware of that. As a guy coming in from the outside, I appreciate it. I value it. I take it serious that I've got a serious job here to not lose track of your care and concern for 50,000 kids. I get that. I get it, and I appreciate it. So community support is just something I've not seen anywhere else, and I read quite a bit, and I keep up with current trends, and I have a lot of colleagues all over the nation, and everyone I talk to is flabbergasted when I talk about Omaha and this community. Other things I heard, some things that we need to improve on. As much as we've had all the support, we do have some resource inequity still. We still do have resource inequity, and part of it's from previous bond issues. One of the things, if you were to tour the buildings, as I have, and I know many of you are very familiar with this, our oldest schools, the ones that were built in the early 1900s, the 1925, 1930, about the same age as my house. By the way, I've learned something about old houses. I never lived in an old house till now. You got to keep the plumber's number close. I've also learned that's a good occupation for young people because I've seen the bills. And so I think being a plumber or an electrician is a good occupation for a young person. And I think it can be lucrative based on what I'm seeing personally. But beyond that, resource equity. So our homes, like some of our schools, were built in the early 1900s. Dundee, Castellar, North High, Central High, gorgeous old buildings that were renovated with previous bond issues. And then we have these schools that were built in the last 10 years, like Buffett, Gateway, Davis, state-of-the-art new facilities. But here's the problem. Of these 86 different programs and sites, we have a whole group that were built during the 50s, 60s, and 70s. Norris Middle School, Beveridge Middle School, and guess what? They got window units in those classrooms. So we took care of the oldest schools, and we took care of the newest schools. But we have this gap of resource inequity of the schools that were built in the 50s, 60s. Western Elementary, right down the street from Dundee Elementary. But it was built in the 60s, and I understand what happened with the previous bond issues. I get it. The highest needs were the oldest schools, and so they focused and concentrated there. And then as this district kept growing, they built the new schools, and so they were state-of-the-art. But that's what our parents and community told me, and I agree. They're right. They're absolutely right. We have some that are just phenomenal. I mean, I'm in awe when I walk into North High and Central High. When you walk into those schools, if you're not in awe, I'd be shocked if you're not, because those are some of the finest facilities in America. And they're beautiful, too. The architectural structure is phenomenal. But anyway, I go on and on that, but I'll stop. The next thing you said, parents and community in this district said, is we need to increase communications. And I heard this from multiple groups. We've not done a good job of telling our story. We've not done a good job of internally telling our story. And that's one of the reasons why Mr. Andrews sits with us today. We just need to do a better job, and he's helping, and I'm doing the best I can to try to create some usage of technology, for example. I have a Twitter account. I don't know if you follow me or not. Pretty exciting stuff. Welcome to follow me. We're doing things we've never done in this district before. I do a podcast now. I did my first one just this last month, and I'm going to do one on a monthly basis, giving a 3-minute clip to every teacher in this district of what's going on. I told him in a letter, I sent him a letter, I said, you know, 3 minutes, and you'll get at least an overview of what's happening with our 50,000 young people. Those are things we haven't done in the past. We haven't done a good job of taking advantage of technology and other tools to increase communication. So we know it's a target. We agree with you that we've not done a good job of creating that. The last thing that you said to me that we need to improve is leadership and clear goals. Again, I've read the World Herald over the last 2 years. There's been a lot of transition. You know, kind of a bumpy road if you think about those articles that have been written over the last 2 years. The district, the community needs, demands, and deserves stability, focus, and alignment. And you really haven't had it for 2 years at the 10,000-foot level. Does that make sense? At the 10,000-foot level, I'm not saying you didn't have it in schools because we got some evidence they were doing great things. But up here, I've had more teachers say, gosh, we just hope that we're going to have some long-term stability with you and the board, and that we'll create that long-term vision. Turned around to one of them and said, gosh, I hope so, too. We sold our house in Kansas, so I'm hoping we're here for a while, too. So I'm on the same page as that person. We need that, and I certainly want that, too, and I think it's best for our kids to have that. We need stability, alignment, and focus, and you told us that, and I agree with that. Oh, we also talked to the parents and community about their expectations for me. We also said that you said we needed to improve the perception of OPS, that there are some folks that don't realize how well many of our young people are doing. There are some folks out there that don't get it, that we are making some progress. We may not be where we want to be, but we're pushing the rock up the mountain. We may not be at the top of it, but we're still pushing it. We're still pushing it the right direction. You said we need to improve our community partnerships. I couldn't agree more. We need to be more effective at creating those relationships and creating accountability within those relationships. You said we needed to improve student achievement. Again, I agree. And I think that's going to come out of the strategic plan as well. You're going to tell us that. And we do. We do need to keep moving that direction. That's our core purpose. That's why we're here. That's why we're here. So those are the kind of things you said to me. I asked principals those same things. I just wanted to show this real quickly, that the principals said the same thing that the community and all the other external groups said. They said much of the same thing. Strengths were diversity, students and staff. Strengths were achievement was going up. Strengths were resources, support for kids, and that's part of that philanthropic piece. I think they recognize that. And they said some of the same things, the same theme kept coming out on communications. The principal said, we don't know what's going on. And by the way, no one asked me what I think we ought to be focusing on. No one asked me what I think we could do to improve the lives of my 500 students, or in the case of Central High, 2,400 students. No one's asking me. I think that's a pretty good comment. That's a pretty good comment. That's what they wrote on those feedback forms. By the way, I didn't ask them to put their names on it, although some of them did, because I wanted to know what they thought, unfettered, unbiased. Technology is another issue principals talk about. We're just not where we need to be, and I got to tell you, I'm coming from a district where I spend a lot of time really developing and enhancing that system because it's a great tool. It's not an answer-all for classroom improvement, but it's a great engager of young people. Unfortunately, here, our backbone, that infrastructure, is really not what it needs to be, and we've got work to do there. I'm not sure how familiar you are with fiber optics versus wire cabling, but we are currently on copper cabling in most of our schools, which limits the bandwidth that goes into that school, which limits the accessibility to video and other things that take up bandwidth. So we're in the midst of figuring out how we're going to create a fiber backbone infrastructure to expand that pipe so that our teachers have more access to quality technology tools that allow them to engage young people more effectively. Again, technology is not an answer-all, but it's a support piece. And our principals said, we want that improved. We want upgrades. We want access. And I agree with them. Focus, consistency. The principals said we need to get that from the board, from the district. Again, that's what you said too. So everyone recognizes that. Next thing they said for me, kind of the same things: leadership, open, clear goals, humor. I'll let you be the judge of that today. My wife sometimes says I got a story I usually tell, but she's here, so it kind of restrains me a little bit. She told me one time that if I was just half as funny as I thought I was, that I'd be pretty funny. So I'm restricted, though. I'll have to stop at that comment. But anyway, I think we have to have a good time while we're working here. I think we better enjoy each other. I think we better enjoy our young people while we're moving down the road, because it's hard work. It's hard work. To do it right is hard work. It requires a lot of hours, a lot of thought. And you better enjoy yourself a little bit and enjoy our young people, because we've got great young people. I mean it. They're just fantastic. So anyway, so that is part of the process to me, too, and that's part of what I want to bring here, too. But the other expectations, they want me to be an advocate. They want me to be pushing, whether it's legislatively and or with this group, and they want me to work with Lincoln and work with our legislative leaders, of which I've now met with all of them. I've met with the governor twice, met with the mayor. In fact, today there's a tax modernization committee that's going to have a hearing right here in town, and hoping to get to that. We had the education committee about a week and a half ago, and I testified to them. And that's part of advocacy, talking about our story, talking about what OPS and 51,000 great kids need. So that's kind of their expectations, and I agree with all of those too. Supporting building leadership, which is a cornerstone of my philosophy. The truth is, I'm just one guy. And the only way we're going to continue improving classroom climate, school culture, is by developing our leaders within those buildings, who then know how to work well with our teachers and help lead and develop them. So it does mean a lot to me that they said the same thing: support building leadership. It's true. As an old high school principal who served in that capacity for many years, I get that. And I told the principals, and I'll say it again, and I'll say it even on air, they're not here to serve me. I'm here to serve them. And they're here to serve the teachers who are serving our young people in a quality fashion. And that's what we're trying to build, that service and leadership attitude. That's what we want, that we're all here to serve, not to be served. It's about young people, and it's about young people and how they feel on that first day of school. Earlier, while we were having lunch, we talked about the principal at North High, Gene Haynes. Many of you know him. Many of you worked with him. He's a great example of a gentleman who's taken ownership for a community. I had the opportunity to be in the parade. They had a big homecoming parade. And the whole community and the whole school community was a part of it. And Gene knew every one of those young people by name. That's what you want. That's what you have to have. That's the only way you can really make a difference, is learning who they are, not just as a name, but personally. And that's where you're going to reach. Mr. Haynes is going to have and is having success at North High, and he'll have more in the future. Doesn't mean he won't have challenges, but because of who he is and how he's working with those young people, he's going to have success. And that's what I want in all 86 buildings. And that's what we're going to continue developing. Part of what's going to help us get there, though, is a strategic plan. And I'm going to go over this just real briefly, because you're going to have opportunities to give us feedback if you haven't already. And I wanted to mention something as we go over this strategic plan and what it is and what it isn't, that one of the really critical pieces that I think is really, again, a statement about this community, I met with leadership from whether it was the chamber or other business leaders, and they said, Mr. Superintendent, we don't care what it costs. We'll help you pay for it. We just want it done right. We want you to ask all the right questions by experts, and we want you to be accountable to what they say. Well, they were serious, because 75% of the cost of this was paid by Peter Kiewit, Sherwood Foundation, and the Omaha Chamber. Now, that's pretty powerful, isn't it? They said, gosh, we'll pay. You know, you put a little bit of skin in the game as a district, but we'll pay, because we want it to be done right, because it's not going to be cheap, because they're coming back every year for the next 3 years after this year, seeing if we did what we said we were going to do and seeing if it made a difference. So they're kind of holding us accountable, but that's a good thing too. And the community wanted that level of support. So let's look at a little bit of the details of what's going to happen with this plan. Here are six phases of this strategy, of this plan for strategic improvement. And if you can't read those, I'll kind of, I don't know if everybody can read that in the back, but it's district community needs assessment, outcome identification, indicator selection, strategy development, plan writing, and that critical friend piece means that they're coming back with a team of people to see whether we're actually having success and see if we're actually implementing what we said we'd implement. But they're doing all kinds of things for those six things. On one hand, it looks kind of simplistic, but when you start looking at the details of it, it's a little more than simplistic. Part of it includes community forums that start this Sunday. Part of it included a group of eight experts, master teachers from across the nation, who went into over 200 classrooms in OPS and are taking all that data, and that's going to be part of what they're going to report out to the school board in the near future. And then they're going to take all the community forum data, and then they're going to take survey data. They surveyed all the teachers, all the administrators in the entire district. They're going to take that data. Of course, they're taking the other data too, that student achievement data that I kind of showed earlier, everything else. They're taking that too. But they also did in-depth interviews and research into how we do HR functions, which, by the way, is a pretty big deal when you got 8,000 employees. They did an in-depth analysis of our financial functions, which is also a pretty big deal when you've got an accounts payable department and a payroll department that's responsible for 8,000 employees and a $660 million budget. Those are pretty big deals. So they looked at everything. I think they even looked at communications and had some conversation with Mr. Andrews. So that's part of what they're bringing together in this strategic planning needs assessment. And by the way, I think these have been published on our website, as well as I did an interview last night with Chronicles that'll be aired on
Channel 7 on Sunday morning, yes, sir.
Channel 7, a great channel. That's where, yes, sir, Mr. Andrews agrees with that, his former employer. Thank you, sir. So here's our timeline. They're going to complete the needs assessment from all that data collection and have a written summary of the findings by the end of November. And then you can see they're going to be writing the plan, and then we're going to start creating what I'd call steering committees to come up with the strategies underneath those goals But we're going to have the total plan available to the public and approved by the board by the 1st of February. Those big targets. What is it that we think is valuable, important? What do we want to see improved? And then underneath those big targets, so what are we going to do about it? And so kind of some big issues there. And then you start to monitor and implement. By the way, that's when the big work really starts, isn't it? All right, you engaged. All right, you created targets. All right, you created plans. Now get to work. And let's make that happen. Let's implement. Let's put some of that into the work. But then you can see they're coming back with follow-up support and follow-up analysis of, did things improve? Did the things that you did to improve student learning, to improve facilities, did it actually make a difference? So I think that's the critical piece of that timeline. And with that, I am open for questions. I appreciate you guys letting me talk today. I know I talked for a long time. I apologize for that. I tend to be a little long-winded. My wife has told me that too, so probably right. And I suspect you may have some questions for me.
Thank you, Mark. I'm Joni Ballion, and I have a whole fistful of questions here. So several of them kind of overlap, and I'll ask the technology questions first. Are you able to reduce costs of administration, et cetera, to free up money for technology and other projects? What are the key considerations for technological changes ahead for instruction in OPS schools? Okay, if it's going to be fiber optics, how much would it cost to get to be where we should be? And then the final part of that is, with tablets becoming the new norm for reading materials and books less popular, how do you plan to address this change in technology?
Great, great questions. I'll tell you, those are all great questions. I'll see if I can kind of keep those in my head there, because you had quite a bit of different directions. On the infrastructure piece, we'll put that fiber optics out to bid. And so we'll have bids on those services. I couldn't tell you what the dollar amount's going to be off the top of my head. It won't be cheap. It's not cheap for any business. It's not cheap for any organization to have a fiber backbone. I can tell you that. I will tell you we get what's called E-rate, which is a federal government piece that helps fund that, which you don't want to lose. And if you don't use it, you lose it. So I guess I'd give you that as a backdrop, but I don't know the dollar amount off the top of my head. In relationship to classroom instructional tools, classroom technology tools, whoever said that on the iPads, they're right. I mean, obviously, we're seeing more and more, whether it's iPads or other types of mobile devices, pad-type devices, because there's a lot more than just the iPad. There's multiple ones out there. I think we're in the midst of a crossroads. If you look at it and do some research, you'll find that if you look out across the United States, there are districts that now have gone totally to some kind of an iPad-type tool where all the textbooks are loaded to it, and they no longer do a hard copy textbook. But there's just kind of a handful. We're kind of on the front edge of that curve. But I think it's going to happen. And here's the critical points with that. Textbooks today, depending on what kind of textbook it is. If it's a physics textbook, did you know we're spending up to $125 per textbook? They're not cheap. And even the basic core courses, social studies, language arts, whatever it might be, we're paying $65, $75 for those. So there is a cost there that if we could transfer that over to the iPad or iPad-type tool and have that textbook loaded on it, there's a point in there where it's going to be cheaper to do that, as well as more efficient and effective, I think. Here's the critical point. Right now, the lowest we can get textbook providers down to is approximately $13 per textbook. Now, you'd say, well, heck, that's a lot cheaper than $65, which is true, but here's the problem. What it gives you is a license to that iPad. So that textbook goes there. You can't pass it on. So it stays with that student and that iPad, whereas you pass on that social studies book. You pass it on. So right now, we're not quite at that price point. But here's what's going to happen, and I've been in some research panels on this. It's not going to take long, and that $13 is going to become $3 or $2. Because think about it. Once you load all that textbook material on a web-based environment, there's no cost after you do the original loading. Whereas a hard copy textbook, the cost is the hard copy textbook. But once you've loaded it once, there's no cost. And you can update it. Think how quickly you can update that textbook. Think how quickly you can update that history book or that physics book. It's all online. So the day's coming. We're just not quite there yet. And the textbook companies, probably no surprise to you, they're kind of fighting it because I think they're going to lose some money on this thing. But I actually think it's going to be good. I think you're going to see it happening in the future. I mean, just think back to where we were 10 years ago. I mean, the changes in technology never stop. Whether you like it or don't like it, it is what it is. And it keeps advancing, and I think you're going to see textbooks in the near future. I've been a part of actually piloting some of that activity in my last district. In fact, we did it with Algebra 1. We had all our Algebra 1 texts online, web-based, and so moms and dads, here was the really neat thing. I'd really like to move in this direction in the future here, too. That Algebra 1 class not only had the textbook online, but let's say you're at home and you pull up your textbook and the teacher's assigned some questions. Let's say the questions are on slope. How to determine slope in a math class. Several different questions. The student answers the questions online. Yes or no, gets the answers right there online. But here's the thing you can do, and here's the thing we did with the pilot that we were doing in my previous districts. The company we were working with loaded videos onto each one of those units. And so if you were studying slope, you could click on a video where the teacher would talk about it, and then they'd say, hey, by the way, you want to know a relevant example of using slope? And they'd show a quick video clip of a construction guy putting roofing material on a roof and talking about how you determine a pitch for a roof. Isn't that great? Because I'll tell you, here's one of the problems with math, and this is why we started there with math. It's hard for moms and dads to tutor kids, especially in upper-level math. Because most of us haven't taken math in a while, right? So what if you had a tutor at home on your iPad, you're teaching your young person slope, and not only do they have the questions, but you've got a quick video clip, 2 minutes, of some guy talking about the difference between a two pitch and a five pitch, and then giving you a relative example of a roofer who's having to determine that. Anyway, so that's where we're headed. We're not there yet. We've got infrastructure, backbone things to do. We do have technology tools in schools, some schools more than others. That's the inequity side of that. Can we reduce enough staff to get us all the technology needs that we have? I don't think so. I don't think there's enough out there to get rid of. Can we reduce? I think we're going to be looking at that. We're going to look at efficiencies. Everything has to be looked at for efficiencies, whether it's positions, people, or materials and supplies. All of that has to be looked at.
Well, follow up, you mentioned reading. So we have a guest in the audience who has been a teacher for 36 years, and having high expectations, I have worked with students below grade level in reading. According to a state senator, all children need to read at third grade level by the end of third grade or be retained. What is your position on this?
I'll be darned. It's a little controversy right there off the bat. I'll be darned. Yes, I saw. Yeah, could have been. That's right. I saw Senator Lautenbaugh's plan. He has about, golly, I want to say about 20 different proposals in multiple different areas, inclusive of retention. Now, that's an interesting item because in reality, if you look at that item, it's been done across the U.S. at times. But if you look a little deeper into the analysis and the data, most states that have done that don't do it for that long, because what they find out is it doesn't get them the results that they thought it would. If it was that simplistic, folks, we'd have all done it a long time ago. It's just not that simplistic. The reality is, if you've got a young person, especially if you're using one data point to determine whether you should retain them, what if they had something going on in their life that week? What if they were in a car wreck and they did poorly on the test? So there's multiple reasons why you wouldn't want to use one single data point, which is part of what I think his bill has in it. That's problematic. You really need to look at multiple data points because there are times when it is appropriate to retain a young person, but you've got to have multiple pieces of information. You've got to have multiple data points on reading skill sets. You've got to have other indicators that suggest that that young person would be more successful by making him or her repeat first grade, or in this case, third grade. Social, emotional, physical size, there are factors that make a difference. But if you're making it on one data point, the research is abundantly clear, you have probably destined that young person to be a dropout by doing that. That's what happens. And I'm just quoting the data on that. It's pretty clear. It's abundantly clear. There are times to retain, but you never do it on one data point. And if you just think about that, if a young person doesn't have success, what if they don't have success after 3 years? What about 4 years? How long do you keep them there? By the way, not many people want children with beards sitting next to their children who are third grade. It does not work. So I find it interesting that we look for simplistic solutions for very complex problems. What we need to do is ramp up support for that young person. What we need to do is provide tutorial experiences. What we need to do is look at daily classroom instruction and how we're providing reading, which, by the way, for the reading teachers in the audience, one of the most complex teaching skills there is. It doesn't seem like it is if you think about it from, and I'm not a reading person, but I've seen and listened to high-quality reading teachers. It is so much more complex than most of us are aware of on how you create from phonetic awareness to fluency and vocabulary and how you develop that. For some young people, it comes very easy. For other young people, it does not. It just simply does not. And it requires some really sophisticated skill sets from sophisticated, high-quality teachers and support programs to boot. I wished it was so simplistic that we could solve every problem by just retaining them. I wish we could. I wish we could, but I don't have any evidence that it works.
Thank you. Creativity and curiosity are important to learning and life. What is your philosophy on fostering creativity and curiosity? How can this be fostered in OPS?
Well, part of that means supporting the arts. Part of that means supporting whether it's performing arts, visual arts, all of those things. We don't need to ever lose those. And sometimes I talk to people who say we just need the core skills. Reading, writing, and math was good enough for me, and I think it's good enough for our kids. Well, the reality is we now know enough about the brain that we understand that performing arts, visual arts, all of those things actually have a critical role in the development of a young brain and also has a critical role in helping young people develop a rounded understanding, too. I also think being in marching band and some of those kind of activities create teamwork skills, some of those soft skills that employers tell me is one of the biggest things they need. They want people that show up at time, on time. They want people that understand how to work with one another. And some of that you get from performing arts, by the way. And then the creative side of it with whether it's visual arts or performing arts, we all have read most of that research that says they actually perform better. Kids who are active in creative endeavors, whether it's band, music, vocal music, other kinds of art programs, they actually perform better academically too. There's a pretty strong correlation there. The music piece is really strong. Unbelievable difference in student achievement with young people who are involved in music. If you have young children, anybody in the audience, I'd sure encourage you to get them involved in some kind of music activity. I don't care if it's band or vocal music. And we were fortunate. Both our kids were in both vocal music and did instrumental music and were very good students. Of course, their mom wouldn't have allowed them to be anything else. So that's a whole different story on what impacts student learning. But I think it's critical, and I think this district understands that, and the community sure does.
The next question addresses gangs and dropouts, how to keep young men engaged in education and out of crime.
Boy, that's a big one. That's a big one. Specifically, obviously, it's going to impact us more in the secondary level, and it does impact us. Schools are a reflection of the community, the neighborhoods they live in. And so if a young person is in a neighborhood where violence and guns are a part of his or her daily life, we have to find ways to keep that out of the school setting and not allow that daily life exposure to become part of our school setting. And by the way, it does happen. I won't deny it. We've had two guns this year that were taken off students in our schools. And they were taken off them after another student said to the principal, "Hey, Joey, Johnny, Susie, Sally, whoever, had a gun." So it does happen. We've not had a shooting. We've not had anything like that. You may have seen it. Pius School in Lincoln had a stabbing. So it is a problem. I guess my biggest answer to that is it's creating a culture of ownership where the young person, I'll go back to my example with Mr. Haynes. If that school and if that principal and staff have created that relationship with that young person, they're going to go tell Mr. Haynes if someone else brings something from the community into that school, which is exactly what happened at North High. We did have a young person that did that. It wasn't a loaded gun, but the other students wanted Mr. Haynes to know because they knew he cared, and they cared. They didn't want North High to be in trouble, and they didn't want someone else to get hurt. You have to create a culture where young people are willing to tell you when that neighborhood influence is encroaching upon the school environment, and they have to look at the school as refuge from that if they're coming from that kind of environment where there is gangs, drugs, violence, and it's out there. And you cannot deny that, but we've got to make sure schools are the utopia, the refuge from it. And that's part of that school culture piece we're going to really influence. And I guess I will share this because I know some people say, well, the real answer is you need metal detectors on every single door and you need bars on every single window. Man, I hope we don't have to go to that extent because I think that impacts culture too in the other way. I don't want our schools to look like prisons. And so finding that balance is so critical because doggone it, I've been to those schools where they have those settings. I've seen them in Cleveland and East St. Louis. It's not an environment that you'd want your sons and daughters in. The minute you walk in there and you've got three armed officers and five metal detectors, you think, wow, we must have problems. I mean, why else would you have that? And so that balance is what I'm looking for of creating a culture where we never allow it to escalate to that point, but recognizing that we are a reflection of our community, and we have to create that culture that stops that. I really don't want to go to that restrictive measure.
Well, we only have like 3 minutes left, and we did have a follow-up on that, and that is, what is your reaction to the situation with the three boys in Millard and the air gun and the being dismissed from school for a year? Would you care to venture a comment on that situation?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Could you make it brief? I'll get in one more question.
Well, that's a challenge, making it brief. It's up to their policies. I will tell you this, that anything that looks like a real gun, a replica gun, you have to take pretty seriously in this day and age. But I also think you also have to step back sometimes and look at the situation. So their policies, I think, may be restrictive so much that they don't allow them to ever have any other methodology of dealing with it. But so, again, it's a serious deal. Replica weapons are very, very serious, too, and they certainly could get you killed in the community if a police officer saw you with one, but I also think common sense ought to be a guide, too.
We have a question here, a person who has mixed feelings about charter schools. On the hand, some cities, New York, for example, seems to have been relatively successful in providing good quality education that is pretty accessible. Other cities, however, seem to have had problems with either cost, quality, or access. What are your views and or experiences with charter schools? In 2 minutes.
In 2 minutes. Wow. Man, this is constraining. I actually have quite a bit of experience with in-district charters in Wichita for approximately 8 years. We did an experiment with a group called Edison. And Edison is a private for-profit company that took over some of the 100 schools in Wichita. And here's the interesting result of that experiment. If you gave them the exact same demographic of young person in those elementaries and middle schools, we never had a high school, but we had elementaries and middle, they didn't do any better. They just didn't do any better. Oftentimes, with some of the charters, they do much better, but if you look into the detail of it, because they took a specific part of the student population. Well, sure, if you take off, for example, don't have ELL students, don't have special needs young people, well, sure, you change your demographic, that's going to immediately impact it. So I guess my experience is that if you give them the same demographic, I've not seen it make that much difference. But I would say this. I think creating focus schools internally and creative, innovative ways, whether it's longer school day, longer school year, innovative practice within OPS is not a bad thing. And I can tell you we've done some of that with some success. You're familiar with Wilson Focus. Wilson Focus has some pretty good success stories out there, pretty powerful. And I think we need to continue looking at that. Are there other ways where we can pilot some innovative practice and ideas, but I'd like to do it internally and not give it away to a private business to have them operate it. So that's my personal reflection. I can tell you that I have not talked to the board about that, so that's just me.
Time to wrap up. Thank you very much, Mark Evans, for being with us today.
You've been listening to a luncheon broadcast from the Omaha Press Club on Noon Forum. On today's program, we've heard a talk by newly appointed superintendent of the Omaha Public Schools, Mark Evans. Mr. Evans assumed the post of superintendent in July after a nearly 2-year search for a successor to John McKeel. He has outlined his goals for the Omaha Public School District, including a new strategic plan. This program was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Thursday afternoon, October 17, 2013, for broadcast at this time. Special thanks to the Omaha Press Club's Education Committee for helping to make the recording and broadcast of this program possible. The Omaha Press Club presents these noontime educational forums each month. The next forum will be held this Thursday, November 7th at 12 noon. The guest speaker at that time will be James Duff, President and Chief Executive Officer of the Freedom Forum, a nonpartisan foundation dedicated to the First Amendment, as well as Chief Executive Officer of the Newseum, an interactive museum of history, news, and technology located in Washington, D.C. If you'd like to attend this or other future programs in the series, call the Omaha Press Club at 402-345-8008. These events are open to both members and non-members of the Omaha Press Club. The Omaha Press Club is located on the 22nd floor of the First National Center, 16th and Dodge, in downtown Omaha. Complete Noon Forum listings, as well as an archive of over 300 previous broadcasts, are available on our website, kios.org. Now, this is your producer and host, Bob Cote, thanking you for listening.